Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, January 9th, 2023. A soldier with South Sudan's People's Defense Forces shot and killed four people in Warab State over the weekend.
We've got a report of three Syrians and one South Sudanese being killed by a suspected soldier in Akone area.
And Sudan's ruling army has promised to hand over power to a civilian authority.
تشكيل حكومة مدنية حقيقية تعبر عن رغبات الشعب السوداني.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities are investigating why a South Sudan soldier apparently killed three Syrian nationals and a South Sudanese in Warab State. A state official says the four were shot in Akon Village. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
Warab State Information Minister William Wall tells South Sudan in Focus the three Syrian nationals and a South Sudanese were shot over the weekend by a soldier believed to be a member of the South Sudan People's Defense Force.
On Saturday this month, 2023, we got a report of three Syrians and one South Sudanese being killed by a suspected soldier in Akone area. With that, we could not find a sufficient report on the incident. Therefore, His Excellency, the Governor of Warab State, Gerald Manin Bolmale, quickly dispatched an investigation team to the scene. However, the suspect was found to be arrested in the area and taken to Division 3 headquarters for further investigation.
Wall says the circumstance that led to the fatal shootings is still unclear. The information minister says state officials were surprised to learn that four people, including foreigners, were gunned down.
We will wait the investigation to give us exactly where they were living and what has made them to collide, or what has intrigued the killer or murderer to kill them. So we are not sure exactly what they were doing there. And exactly the place or the location, village, because in Akon there are so many villages around, and whether the incident took place in the town or outside the town.
Wall says state authorities will determine the cause and ensure that justice is carried out.
And justice must prevail in accordance to our laws, the Republic of South Sudan. I urge the companies and the international organizations and all the working classes in South Sudan to remain calm. This was said and called for, and it must be dealt with in accordance to our laws, the Republic of South Sudan.
The latest killing comes amid increased communal violence in recent months across several parts of the country. South Sudan's military spokesperson told this program earlier that some forces have been deployed to hotspots around the country to contain the violence. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
And from Juba, we now move to the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, where Sudan's ruling military has vowed that the army will come under civilian authority as the two sides hammer out a final agreement on a two-year transitional government before elections are held. Michael Atit reports from Khartoum, Sudan.
3 days of talks between military and civilian leaders continued Monday with the aim of reaching a final deal on governing during a two-year transition to elections. The spokesman for the civilian side, Khalid Omar Youssef, addressed the media Monday at a press conference in Khartoum, broadcast by the state-run Sudan News Agency. He says, "This is an opportunity for all Sudanese to engage and cooperate with the regional and international community to achieve the high national interest of the country." At a launch of the final phase of the political process Sunday, Sudan's Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan repeated the military's vow to place itself under a civilian government. His speech was also broadcast by Sudan's state news agency.
هذه قناعتنا ونتمنى أن نرى قريبا تشكيل
He says it is the military's conviction that we will soon see a true civilian government established in Sudan that will fulfill the aspirations and ambitions of the Sudanese people towards a free, just, and peaceful state. The army chief gave no details on when the military will step aside, but said it would keep its word to leave politics. He also applauded efforts by regional and international partners to help end Sudan's political crisis. Al-Burhan overthrew a transitional civilian government led by former Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok in October 2021, citing lack of attention to alleged threats. The coup came just weeks before the military was to hand power to civilian authorities, sparking international condemnation and withdrawal of foreign aid. Sudan's pro-democracy groups have staged near-weekly protests ever since, demanding the military step down. Security forces have frequently clashed with the protesters, leaving scores dead, almost all of them protesters. The African Union, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, and the UN, known as the Trilateral Mechanism, have been mediating in Sudan with the aim of breaking the deadlock. The talks are expected to include reforming Sudan's security forces. Michael Latid for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
Cameroon's second largest employer, the state-run Cameroon Development Corporation, is calling for thousands of plantation workers who fled the country's separatist conflict to return to work. About half the company's 20,000 workers left in 2018 over unpaid wages and after deadly and brutal attacks. The company last week said it was safe to return, but workers are skeptical and say it should first rebuild homes destroyed or damaged in the conflict. Moki Edwin Kitseka reports from Bouay, Cameroon.
The Cameroon Development Corporation, or CDC, says it wants thousands of workers back at banana, palm oil, and rubber plantations in the restive southwest region. Managers of the state-run giant, Cameroon's second largest employer, on Monday visited towns and villages in the region to meet with workers who fled unrest in 2018 and asked them to return. Cameroon Agricultural and Allied Workers Trade Union President Gabriel Menge Vefonge was part of the delegation. He says the corporation has promised to pay back wages to those workers who return.
Most of them are doing mean jobs in many areas of this country, so we are calling them to come back. Security is being guaranteed by the state, and we have seen in the last 6 months there is relative calm. For those who had wounds, we think that the wounds have healed, and the CDC management is taking care of them. Our members should come back to work.
Cameroon's military says it has chased the rebels from the plantations, which armed groups used for training camps. In 2018, the rebels ordered workers to leave the plantations and warned that those who refused would be attacked. Authorities say the armed groups chopped off fingers of scores of workers suspected of collaborating with the government and torched hundreds of homes, schools, and factories. William Lekunja, a worker at a plantation in Mianja, says he escaped in 2018. He says he will only return if the company improves work and living conditions in villages damaged in the conflict.
They cannot eat well because what they have is too meager. Others who have gone there came back with testimonies. Their hospital bills are paid by themselves. There's no good housing for them, no good water for them.
Cameroon's government says some of the company's former workers are owed more than 2 years back pay. The company has vowed to pay back wages, but says the conflict and exodus of workers led to a massive drop in production and sales. The government says sales and revenue increased after about 2,000 workers returned in 2021 and 2022. CDC General Manager Franklin Goninjie says if the remaining 8,000 workers return, the company's sales will return to previous levels. He says they would then be able to afford paying back salaries and reconstructing destroyed buildings.
The solution is getting back to work, working and making money, money to help pay wages. To pay those who are working, just salaries alone cost the corporation about 900 million francs. It is difficult to get that amount of money. But that notwithstanding, we try to do what must be done to continue to operate.
Cameroon's separatist conflict was sparked in 2016 when English-speaking Western regions protested discrimination by the country's French-speaking majority. Cameroon's military responded with a crackdown and rebels took up arms, claiming to defend the English-speaking minority. The UN says the conflict has since left 3,500 people dead and 750,000 displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Boya, Cameroon.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN warns of malnutrition rates on the rise in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Stay tuned for details coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get, or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself, I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with a chill drink.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has warned that malnutrition rates are growing in Ethiopia's Tigray and Afar regions, despite increased amounts of aid to the embattled areas. In its latest report, officials said access to provide aid remains difficult in some areas. Maya Massacre reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Ethiopia says from mid-November through December, more than 3,000 trucks of food, health and shelter aid were sent to Tigray region. In its latest report Thursday, the agency said in the last week of December alone, it assisted 368,000 people in Tigray with food aid, some of which was also sent by air. But the biweekly report said malnutrition rates were alarmingly high, with one-third of children and two-thirds of pregnant and lactating women screened in December found to be acutely malnourished. Despite the Ethiopian government allowing increasing amounts of aid to Tigray since a November peace deal, the UN report said some areas were still out of reach. It said organizations working with the UN had assisted about 60% of 5.4 million people targeted for help in Tigray since October. A UN spokesperson in Ethiopia was not immediately available to comment. Debeba Zode, spokesman for Ethiopia's National Disaster and Risk Management Commission, says they have reached areas other aid groups cannot, including border areas near Eritrea, where they have given food to about 81,000 people. Debeba says food assistance has been given to more than 8 million people in need of support in the northern part of the country, including Tigray, Amhara, and Afar. The November peace deal between Ethiopia's federal government and the Tigray People's Liberation Front ended 2 years of war and lifted aid and services blockades to the region. Ethiopia in December restored water, power, and telecommunications in several towns in the region, as well as commercial flights to the capital, Mekele. While fighting has calmed in Tigray, clashes are being reported in Ethiopia's southern Oromia region. Ethiopia's Oromo and Amhara ethnic groups blame each other for allegedly deadly attacks since November. The UN report said aid access to Oromia region was difficult, with ongoing conflict displacing more people. It said as of December 30, more than 14,000 people fleeing conflict from Oromia arrived in Amhara region. Maya Misaker for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed has called on young al-Shabaab fighters he says are brainwashed to surrender to the government amid ongoing military offenses against the group. Mohamed Desane reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
Speaking at a mosque in the country's capital, Mahmoud, who was last year after his election for second time declared an all-out war against the Islamist insurgents, also called on the al-Shabaab fighters to denounce the terrorist ideology before it is too late. His remarks come after the militant carried out two attacks on government forces in Somalia's central region in 2 days, killing more than 43 people, including senior officers. He said he wants to tell the boys to return from the wrong path they are taking. He urged them to return to their government, to their people, and to their religion. He said every step they take from now on will only increase their guilt. The president's message comes as Somali forces backed by locals continue battling the group in the total war he declared on the militant government forces have liberated large swathes of territory from the group, mainly in the south central state of Hirshabelle. Speaking to state-run television in Mogadishu, Somali Prime Minister Hamza Abdi Barre said an investigation is underway into soldiers who were arrested on suspicion of facilitating the al-Shabaab attack on the Villa Reis Hotel in Mogadishu in late November. Barre did not say how many soldiers were involved.
Ciidamadii joogay shaqada ku jiray oo dhan way wada xiran yihiin.
He says all of the soldiers who were working that day have been arrested and an investigation is currently underway. He says he wants the ongoing investigation to be successful and impartial. The hotel attack claimed by the militant group al-Shabaab killed at least 13 people, including 5 al-Shabaab attackers. The popular Villa Reis Hotel was located near the presidential palace in Mogadishu and was frequented by senior government and security officials. The Somali government has been fighting al-Shabaab for more than 15 years. The Islamist group carried out deadly attacks in the Horn of Africa nation, targeting government officials and African Union peacekeepers. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Last month, Busi Maisela became the first woman to form a political party in Eswatini, the Swazi's first democratic front. Yesterday, she and other pro-democracy groups attended the funeral of the party's deputy secretary general. Maisela tells VOA's James Buddy that her party's deputy secretary general was abducted from his home and killed. She says the party has suspicions and wants the government to find the killer or killers.
Last week, on Tuesday, around 7, 4 men went to his home in the rural areas and abducted him in front of the key. He shouted, but no one helped him, so they put him in the car. With them, they drove away in front of the family. They alerted me. I put on social media and the newspapers that he's been abducted, and we don't know. But they do have the make of the car. So we put everywhere. We tried calling the police to see if he has been taken to maybe for questioning because of the political involvement. That's what we thought. We called the whole night. I was calling everywhere to check if he was taken to court for anything or jail or something, but we couldn't find him. In the morning, when we woke up, again, I was waiting to hear news. We're still trying and calling. And then I received a call that his body has been found.
Busi, you say you suspect he was abducted.
He was taken. He was taken in front of his family by 4 men.
So you said you believe the state might have abducted him. Do you have any reason to think that way?
Yes, because they came straight to the home. He was just at home. And the people acted like they needed some water. They had a problem with their car. So when the kids were trying to get water for them, the car parked by the gate. When he was walking there, they just grabbed him. 4 men grabbed him and threw him into their car and drove away in front of the family.
What do you do now?
Okay, at the moment, we just got... I still need to meet the family about the postmortem, but obviously he was tied. I think he was tied down or he was pushed down on the floor and they just shot him straight into the heart. because the bullet was found, it had dug a hole. It went through his chest straight to the hole on the ground. And we are just waiting for the justice system in the country, the police, to do their investigation at this point. We need help. We need help. We are still traumatized.
What a way to start a new year with a new political party to suffer such a loss.
Yeah, it's tragic. It's really bad. You never know, because you are saying that we have other parties in the country. They are still there. Why would someone refuse that we have our own party? And then it's government, we don't know. But obviously we suspect it's government, because we don't think anyone among the mass democratic movement would do such a thing. For what?
Because the last time I spoke with you, I asked whether the existing political parties have welcomed your new party. And you said yes.
Yes, I would say that. We have such a warm welcome. Obviously, we have Swalimo, where we are coming from, both with this SG, most of the executive members. So, yeah, with them, they couldn't even really feature in the funeral, because I don't know why. It's very difficult for them to accept that we broke away from that main party and started this one, I think. So we don't want to be pointing fingers. But yeah, with them, they are the only ones that are not really accepting our views.
Busi, thank you so much again, and sorry for your loss.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is partnering with African nations to formulate and implement a strategy aimed at mitigating climate change, helping Africans adapt to its effects, and supporting a just energy transition. African nations have contributed relatively little to this crisis, but are disproportionately harmed by it, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. To achieve our shared priorities, we must work together as equal partners, said Secretary Blinken. First, we are partnering to conserve ecosystems. Africa is home to some of the world's most precious ecosystems, which are critical for combating climate change.
To support the sustainable management of the Congo Basin rainforest, we've invested over $600 million in the Central Africa Regional Program for the Environment, which brings together the U.S. government and African and U.S. NGOs.
To protect other vital ecosystems, we are building coalitions between Africa's governments, the private sector, and civil society. Second, through the President's Emergency Plan for Adaption and Resilience, we are working with national governments to help more than 500 million people in developing countries manage the impacts of climate change. At COP27 at Sharm el-Sheikh, the United States announced $28.6 million to help fill weather, climate, and water observation gaps and co-develop early warning systems in Africa. $24 million to enhance regional risk insurance pools, $25 million to launch the Africa Adaption Initiative's Food Security Accelerator, and $10 million to support the launch of the Cairo Center for Learning and Excellence on Adaption and Resilience to build capacity across the continent. Third, we're partnering to advance a just transition to a clean energy economy, said Secretary Blinken.
Africa will be at the center of the clean energy transition. Its renewable energy potential is second to none. It's home to roughly a third of all critical minerals essential to the technology that will power the clean energy economy, like batteries for renewable energy storage and wind turbines.
To do this, the United States sponsors programs like the Power Africa Presidential Initiative, which has helped 165 million more people in sub-Saharan Africa to access cleaner, reliable energy. The United States is investing another $290 million in Power Africa. All of these efforts recognize that combating the climate crisis, like so many other challenges we face, was actually championed by Africans in the first place, said Secretary Blinken. In Africa, we see not only the stakes of the crisis, but also the solutions.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. Thank you.
And that's all we've prepared for you for this Monday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kemebe and his song, Celebrate. We've been listening to Emmanuel Kamebe and the song Celebrate. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.